Hey, welcome back to Politico Tech. Today's Wednesday, July 10th. I'm Stephen Overly. So Politico Tech was off last week. And just as we went on hiatus, the Supreme Court dropped a big decision affecting the future of online speech. But the ruling was not exactly decisive, and the legal fight isn't over yet. To get you up to speed, Florida and Texas passed laws a few years ago that would essentially prevent social media platforms like Facebook and X from moderating political speech. The companies had just banned former President Donald Trump in the wake of the January 6th insurrection, and conservatives accused them of political bias and censorship. Two tech trade associations sued to block those laws, and their challenge made its way to the Supreme Court, which said more legal analysis needed to be done, and sent them back to the lower courts. So, like I said, this isn't over yet. To explain what happens now, I called up Matt Wood. Matt is the Vice President of Policy and the General Counsel at Free Press, a group that advocates for free speech and an open internet. He tells me that while the legal fight is a bit muddled, the Supreme Court's message about online speech is not. Here's our conversation. Matt, welcome to Politico Tech.
Thanks, Stephen. Great to be here.
The Supreme Court was expected to rule in two cases concerning online speech. And instead of exactly picking a winner, what the justices did was kick that case back to the lower courts. So what happens now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they had to rule and they did it at the last possible minute, taking us into July. But they finally put it out there on the last decision day. And it may have been slightly overshadowed by the immunity case, but we'll still take it and deal with the consequences. I would say that, yeah, the procedural posture is a little bit unusual. It reads as a procedural loss for NetChoice and CCIA, the trade associations that brought the case. But then once you get past that part where those associations failed on what's called a facial challenge, really the rest of the majority opinion explains why these laws are unconstitutional and very unlikely to survive any kind of serious First Amendment scrutiny. So again, the procedure posture is a little bit confusing even, or at least not the clearest thing in the world, but I do think the bulk of the opinion really does read like a big victory for not just the platforms, but for groups like mine that called for this kind of result and that did not want to see Texas and Florida interfering in the content moderation choices that these platforms can make.
Well, that's so interesting because in these groups that brought the case, NetChoice and CCIA, as you mentioned, have sort of treated this decision as a victory. But it is a little bit muddled because now this goes back to the lower courts. They're going to have further review. Do we know what that will entail?
I don't think we can know what it will entail, but we can see how much the Supreme Court majority opinion or the opinion of the court, the one written by Justice Kagan, attempts to shape what that will look like. So after basically saying both these associations and also the states for that matter and the courts for that matter failed to undertake the proper analysis. They failed to sort of look at every possible application of these statutes to every kind of platform that might qualify as what's defined as a social media platform or any kind of online entity that's covered. So that's why it gets thrown back to the lower court. The reason I think that the associations are right to cast it as a victory is the rest of the opinion by Justice Kagan, joined by five other justices, except Justice Jackson, kind of bowed out of a few pieces, lays out this entire First Amendment history and says, well, here's why these kinds of statutes are very unlikely to survive any kind of review by the court. The opinion makes very clear why this kind of curating and editing and publishing and collection of other people's content that social media platforms do very much does fit into a line of cases about First Amendment rights fully applying to and protecting editors, curators, those who collect other people's stories. They would have a really tough time getting over any kind of First Amendment hurdle.
So does this, you know, next phase of this legal fight going back to the lower courts actually even matter?
Well, it matters a lot. I just think we don't know what's going to happen, right? Like, will the state attorneys general defend these laws as vigorously, having gotten this very clear signal that at least a lot of the justices on the Supreme Court think that their laws can't pass muster? Will the associations bring a new kind of challenge and try to drop their facial challenge and say, okay, we're going to focus only on the content moderation by the biggest platforms that really does seem to be what the states were aiming at? but you know, they can choose whether or not to try to alter their challenge. And then the lower courts too will have to decide, okay, if none of that happens, if neither the associations on the company side nor the states change their posture, what kind of analysis do we have to do now consistent with what the Supreme Court said? Supreme Court basically said, we're throwing it back to the appellate courts because you guys need to find facts, but that's not the appellate court's job either. So what probably would happen is it would go back down to the lowest courts in each case, and we would essentially start all over again. And that's what the Supreme Court opinion makes clear, too. You know, we're in a very preliminary posture here. This got up to the Supreme Court at this injunction phase, and so things could proceed on a slightly less accelerated timetable. But, you know, I wouldn't want to make predictions as to exactly when or how that will happen.
And so in your mind, I mean, does this decision leave any kind of big unanswered question?
I mean, it doesn't really leave questions in my mind on what's likely to happen. The First Amendment jurisprudence and the way that the Kagan opinion walks through it is crystal clear, and I think reads very well, and you know, reads as a, if not a death knell for these kinds of statutes, then certainly a very severe blow. I think what's unclear is what we were talking about a second ago. That kind of what happens next, I think, is a little bit hard to predict, especially for somebody in my shoes who isn't part of the case. And there are some other unanswered questions, too. You know, what the justices who did not join the opinion of the court, so we're talking Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch, and they wrote separately, they said, well, we agree with the court that the associations didn't carry off the facial challenge, right? So they're almost on the state side, but have to, if not begrudgingly, then somewhat reluctantly admit that the judgment was correct. But then they say, and especially the Alito concurrence, although it really reads like a dissent that comes last, says, here's why this is not so clear-cut. So he's pushing back against the Kagan opinion and the opinion that was joined by the majority of the justices on the court and saying, you know, as the majority opinion did too, there are lots of things that we don't know here. So how would this apply to something that isn't classic content moderation of somebody's newsfeed or main page? You know, how would this apply to messaging services that Facebook provides, whether it's Messenger or WhatsApp or something else? How would it apply to Etsy? How would it apply to Yelp or some other site? Justice Barrett's concurrence gets into this too, where the moderation isn't based on any kind of expressive choice or community guidelines that Facebook or YouTube may have. It's based on nothing more than the user's preferences. So there's certainly some interesting questions to explore there, and not just for this case, but they talk about common carriage a lot, right? So that gets into this notion of what is a common carrier? We've had for years and years many Republicans and conservative justices saying, we don't want common carrier status for ISPs like Comcast and AT&T. Now these states have done almost a complete 180 and said, but we do want that kind of must carry or common carrier status for websites that they think of as powerful. And so there's a lot of interesting academic questions and really meaty ones, too, for what happens next for the internet companies writ large.
And are those questions strictly academic, or do they matter to the users of these platforms, too?
I think they matter, sure. I mean, whether or not a company has the right to take down a post you put up, or how it takes it down, or why it takes it down, those are certainly interesting questions. You know, a group like ours here at Free Press, we have long said that these giant platforms are not doing a good enough job of enforcing their own terms of service. So they will often make inconsistent decisions, and especially when you look at what they take down in English versus other languages. You know, we've called on them to do a better job, and that experience is exactly why this is important for users. People do care what they're seeing in their timeline, whether they're speaking or reading or doing a combination of those two things. The key question is, who gets to decide? And as much as we are critics of Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk or others who run these companies and all the people that they employ for not doing it well enough, in our view, we think they need to be more accountable and more socially responsible. But, you know, it's a huge question as to whether they decide that or whether the government decides that for them. And I think that's exactly what the opinion of the court here makes so clear, that the government cannot, as Justice Kagan says, it's not that she's saying Texas's views on what should be on Facebook aren't necessarily worse or better than Mark Zuckerberg's. It's just that a state government cannot make that choice for a platform.
Well, for now, these laws in Texas and Florida are on hold as this all plays out. Other states, though, are attempting to regulate social media platforms, including a number of states that are sort of regulating how those platforms are used by teens. You know, New York, for example, just passed a law pertaining to social media algorithms. Does anything in this decision suggest that those efforts in other states to regulate social media can run afoul of the First Amendment or will have some higher legal bar to clear?
Yeah, I think these decisions, they don't speak directly to those kinds of laws, but I certainly think that they're important and could be influential in those contexts. You know, what will change there is not so much the activity of the platform that is under the gun and that the state is questioning. What the state may be able to argue is, well, minors have different rights under the First Amendment. So cases have been decided based on whether school children may or may not be prohibited from accessing certain information. You know, that can depend on whether they're in the school building or whether it's after hours. But you know, without saying it's a slam dunk in any sense, that's the kind of question that you'll see here. Is there some sort of different set of protections that apply to people under a certain age? And then if there is or isn't, there's a separate question. Is there some more compelling interest that the government has in preventing people from accessing that content? So, you know, I tend to think that these laws, when they're not based on privacy and user control, but when they're instead based on what it's okay for kids to see and whether or not the government should be stepping in and making those choices instead of parents and other caregivers making those choices, I think those laws tend to overreach. But, you know, that's not, again, an easy question here. I certainly think this opinion has a lot to say about that. But, you know, as the opinion also goes out of its way to say, these are complicated questions. So I wouldn't say that you can draw a straight line from this decision to any one of those other state statutes and say we know how that kind of challenge would come out.
Right. Well, and I doubt that this will be the last case involving online speech to find itself before the Supreme Court. And there's been some criticism in the past, for instance, of whether or not the court is tech savvy and understands these issues.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I know that's a popular sport to say the judges just don't get it or Congress doesn't get it. I think that's less and less true if it was ever fair. You know, we can all look back at some of these opinions, and that's even how this opinion starts out, referencing one from 30 years ago and saying, you know, we doubt that the nation or the world needs a Supreme Court to explain to it what the internet is anymore, mm-hmm. right? It's not nascent. It's out there. So I think this generation of justices is more self-aware. They've grown up with the technology as much as many of us have. And, you know, this should not be confused for saying judges or lawmakers ought to be deciding these questions for us every time. But I don't really think there's a lack of tech savviness. I think that this opinion and the ones that I would hesitate, you know, they're not dissents, but they're not in agreement with the opinion of the court. You know, I think all of them do a pretty good job of both understanding what's unique about these current media, but also analogizing to older forms of media and upholding and applying the same First Amendment principles that always have and frankly still should apply.
Does anything in this decision also telegraph how this particular Supreme Court might think about online speech?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, you saw the justices who were in the majority opinion, the opinion of the court, as it's called, were the three liberals, as I guess we must call them, although Justice Jackson only concurred in most of the opinion, but not every part. She kind of had a little reluctance to jump in and do the deep dive of the analysis of why these laws would likely run afoul of the First Amendment if and when they come back. But it was three liberal justices, plus also Roberts and Barrett and Kavanaugh, who has long had this kind of, I would say, more pro-speech and protective of corporate interests stance, even when he was on the D.C. Circuit. So, you know, I think that those justices have signaled pretty clearly they think that First Amendment principles apply to tech companies and to other corporate speakers and other forms of media, whatever kind of expressive activity they're engaged in. It still has to be expressive. You know, there are lots of ways that I mentioned a little while ago where these companies might not be involved in picking and choosing which kind of content or viewpoints they want to have on their site.
Right.
And so there's that gray area left. But I think those justices pretty clearly signal that it's going to take a lot to get past them and to convince them that any kind of regulation that wouldn't just impact, but as they made clear again and again, that was designed to impact and intended to impact the mix of viewpoints and messages on these platforms. They've clearly signaled, you know, that's a problem. I mentioned this a second ago, but it's interesting to see this almost, I don't know what, carousel whirl, and to have the more conservative justices, Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch, now trying to carve out space for this kind of regulation. But they basically say, no, there actually could be room for regulating here if the companies are just passing through all information, if they're acting as dumb pipes, which is, you know, itself sort of a quaint term at this point in time and something that people have been talking about since the 90s or at least two decades ago. But, you know, that's still very much on the table is what is allowed when the companies are serving as common carriers. You know, is Facebook a common carrier? Is Comcast? I think these are interesting academic questions, back to something you mentioned earlier, but they're not solely academic. They really will shape how people experience the internet and thus experience their world.
Right. Well, and it could also shape what the government can and can't do in terms of regulating these platforms in the future.
Yeah.
Matt, listen, appreciate you breaking this down for us and joining us on Politico Tech.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I mean, I think it's an interesting time when you don't necessarily have people just lining up on either side based only on their party. But it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. I'm Stephen Overley. See you back here tomorrow.